Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the foreign service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. This is Fernando Farias speaking, and together with sound technician Sergio Bosco, we'll be bringing you this show in English for Tuesday, November 12, 2024. We'll have news, sports, music. We'll have music by a very important Uruguayan singer-songwriter who's turning 71 today. Jaime Ross will be sharing music by this important South American artist, and also we'll be talking a little bit about him. We'll also be putting on the air an interview we recorded a few weeks back with an American visitor, Mark Gura, an expert in technology education or technology applied to education, who visited us here in the studio. A friend of mine who helped me with my thesis on educational podcasting and was a tourist in Buenos Aires and joined us in the studio for a little talk on education vis-a-vis Argentina, the United States. We are broadcasting via the shortwaves of WRMI. The frequency is 5850 kilohertz, and we are also streaming via our webpage, rae.com.ar. You may also listen to us via our app for mobile devices that you can download for free for Android and Apple phones. And let me remind you that you can contact us via email to qslrae@gmail.com or by letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way is okay for sending reception reports if you are a DXer, okay? We are ready now to get started with the news. These are the headlines. Argentina protests British military aircraft landing in Brazil. Argentina was the only country to oppose a UN resolution on indigenous rights. Colombia, Supreme Court calls on ELN rebels to halt operations amid a flooding crisis. Peru prepares for hosting the APEC Pacific Summit with Biden and Xi Jinping attending. Fears of escalating violence in Haiti following Prime Minister's removal. Sports: Lionel Messi trains with Argentina squad for Paraguay World Cup qualifier. And these are the news. The Argentine government has presented a formal protest to the UK over British military aircraft landing in Brazil. The Foreign Ministry announced that Argentina communicated its concerns to London via its embassy in Buenos Aires. In the message, the Milei administration reaffirms the nation's sovereignty over the islands. Argentina also reiterated its willingness for a constructive dialogue toward a peaceful, just, and lasting resolution over the Malvinas dispute. The recent military landings reportedly involved 5 fighter jets and 2 Airbus planes at Brazil's Galeão Air Base in Rio de Janeiro over the weekend. This incident comes in the context of a recent visit paid to the islands by the British Armed Forces Minister, Luke Pollard. Argentina was the sole country to vote against the UN resolution on indigenous rights. The proposal is sponsored by Bolivia, Dominica and Liberia, among others, gained support from 161 out of 169 UN members. While 7 abstained, only Argentina opposed it. This resolution seeks to strengthen global commitments to protect Aboriginal communities, improving their access to justice, environmental protection and preservation of their cultures and languages. This marked the first UN vote cast since the new foreign minister, Gerardo Huertain, was sworn in a week ago. Let's recall that he replaced Diana Mondino after she was asked to step down following a vote at the United Nations against the American embargo on Cuba. Concerns are growing over violence spiraling again in Haiti following the ousting of Prime Minister Gary Conil. He was removed by the Presidential Transition Council, which political parties formed in an attempt to restore order in Haiti after years of instability and chaos. Conil in turn claims that his removal was unconstitutional. Alix Didier Fizem, a businessman, has been named as the replacement and has called for national unity this week. Haiti's ongoing security crisis with criminal gangs controlling key areas of the country, particularly in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Recently, an international force headed by Kenya has joined local police in an effort to curb gang violence. Peru is preparing to host the APEC summit, the Pacific Bloc's key gathering. Around 13,000 police officers have been assigned to secure the event in Lima, which runs from November 14 to 16. US President Joe Biden and China's Xi Jinping are among the high-profile leaders attending. To ease congestion, President Dina Boluarte's government has ordered online teaching for schools and remote work for public employees for the length of the summit. Approximately 600 US military personnel authorized by Peru's Congress will also be assisting in security in the context of the summit. Colombia's Supreme Court has called on the ELN guerrillas to group to hold their operations in areas that were hit by floods, allowing humanitarian aid to reach those affected. The court's request specifically refers to regions like Chocó, La Guajira and Bogotá, which are grappling with the effects of heavy rains and flooding. Colombians in these areas urgently need assistance, as stated the court in a communique. In response to the climate disaster, let's recall that President Gustavo Petro has declared a nationwide emergency. His administration, let's recall, is currently negotiating a peace agreement with the ELN. And now, sports. Argentina's national football team has begun training for its upcoming World Cup qualifying matches against Paraguay and Peru. The squad, including captain Lionel Messi, gathered in Buenos Aires yesterday to start preparing. On Thursday, in Asunción, Argentina will face Paraguay, that's coached by an Argentine, Gustavo Alfaro. 5 days later, Argentina will play Peru in Buenos Aires at Boca Juniors Stadium. With 22 points, Argentina currently leads the qualifiers for the 2026 World Cup set in the US, Mexico and Canada. And these were the news on RAE, Radiodifusión Argentina al Exterior.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo. RAE, Argentina,面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
La RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Coming up, this interview that we recorded with educator Mark Gura from the United States, in which we compare the educational systems of Argentina and the US during this expert's visit to the country as part of a holiday. He was as a tourist in Buenos Aires and he joined us in the context of his visit. But this will be after paying homage to a very important Uruguayan artist who's celebrating his 71st birthday today. I'm talking about Jaime Ross, singer-songwriter of Uruguay and a national icon in this neighboring country, a symbol of Rio Platense music, that's to say, music from the Rio de la Plata region that is shared by, as you well know, both Argentina and Uruguay. Ross uses a lot of candombe in his music. Candombe is the percussion-driven music that was created and danced by the Afro-Uruguayans and now is like the national music of Uruguay. Jaime Ross uses a lot of this in his music. And, as I said, he's an icon of Rio Platense music, meaning that he's popular on both banks of the Rio de la Plata. Here in Argentina, he plays very frequently and is much admired and is very popular as well, filling stadiums and so on. He hasn't come very frequently over the past few years, but in the past he would come all the time to perform here in Buenos Aires, which is a very important destination for Uruguayan artists. So, in order to celebrate Jaime Ross's birthday, we're gonna be playing music by him and by him alone on today's playlist. To begin with, this may be his biggest hit, his biggest song, Amándote, Loving You.
Que me voy a morir amándote, amándote, amándote. Algún día sabrás lo que ha sido vivir amándote, amándote, amándote. Algún día verás, voy a morir. Algún día sabrás lo que ha sido vivir amándote, amándote, amándote. Algún día verás que me voy a morir amándote, amándote, amándote. Algún día sabrás lo que ha sido vivir amándote, amándote, amándote. Y fue así que me dijo, no te enamores de nadie, no te enamores de nadie. Me dijo, no te enamores de nadie, mi vida, mi amor. Fue así que me dijo, no te enamores de nadie, no te enamores de nadie. Me dijo, no te enamores de nadie, mi vida, mi amor. Algún día verás que me voy a morir amándote, amándote, amándote. Algún día sabrás lo que ha sido vivir amándote, 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 amándote.
Algún día verás que me voy a morir
amándote, 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 amándote.
Welcome to The Conversation. The Conversation. A space to share the art of an interview.
Folks, we're going to have an interview now with a guest, but I have to give you a little background before I introduce him. I graduated at the University of La Plata. I got a major in media studies and journalism, and to obtain that degree, I had to write a thesis that took me a couple of years. And I did my thesis on educational podcasting, which at the time of the production of my thesis was unheard of here in Argentina, 2015, 2014, 2016, around that time. So doing my research, I looked for literature here in the country, found none. So I started looking on Amazon and came across a book called Podcasting for Teachers. Written by American educator Mark Gura. So I started looking for him, trying to contact him, and thanks to social media, I was able to contact him and ask him if he could help me with my thesis through an interview that he kindly gave me. And well, long story short, I got my thesis A grade, and Professor Mark Gura was a big help. Last week, also on social media, I find out that he's visiting Argentina, so I invited him to come to the studio, and he also accepted this invitation, and he's right here with us. Welcome to the show, Mark. Thank you very much for everything, for the help with the thesis, and for coming to the show today.
Fernando? Yeah, it's like my brother from another mother. I should mention also that sitting across from
Is
my wife, Maria.
Maria, welcome to the show also.
Hola, hello.
You guys are here as tourists. Before we talk a little bit about education and the topics that brought us together, why don't you tell us the reason for being here in the country and how you picked this destination? Well, Maria, you want to...
Well, it was Maria's choice.
Maria?
Yes, it was my choice because I've been to Argentina before and I liked it and I wanted to get to know it better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hot in South Florida right now, and I knew Argentina was nice and cold.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here.
We're running away from the cold.
Yes.
From the hot, from the heat.
From the hot,
from
exactly,
the heat of the northern hemisphere. Good, good.
Yeah, it wasn't really a hard sell.
Yeah,
because I'm a culture vulture.
Yeah,
and already we've been to several art museums.
Yeah, good.
I'm in heaven.
No, the good thing for you guys this time is that you are only focusing on Buenos Aires, and that is you're staying in Buenos Aires for this trip or for most of this trip, and that is something that, as a tour guide, which is something I also do, I encourage people to do on a following visit. Most of the people come here passing by through Buenos Aires, or they spend just a couple of days as part of a larger tour, including Patagonia, Iguazu Falls, Machu Picchu, Rio de Janeiro, you name it. But I always say, if you have the chance, come back and spend a good week, a full week, even 10 days in Buenos Aires. It won't let you down. It's a city that parallels big capitals or big cities in the world like New York, London, Barcelona, in which you can really immerse and experience the city in different ways. And that's what you guys are doing now, and good for you.
And visually, it's really a stunning city, mm-hmm. I have to say.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It is. I'm really proud of being a porteño. I love my city. Glad that you appreciate that too. I wanted to talk a little bit about education and about the topics that we discussed was almost a decade ago when I read your book. When was that book released? What year was released?
I don't recall, but
it was early 2010s.
Yeah, I probably wrote it around 2010, and our conversation would have been 2012, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, more recent than that, but. Over a decade ago.
Yeah. And I didn't mention it yet, but Professor Gura was a public school teacher in Harlem for several years, but he also worked for the New York Education Department, and you were in charge of the technology area of that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I had a very interesting career. For close to two decades, I was a visual art teacher. That was my background. And most of that I spent in East Harlem, inner cities, where I met my wife, Maria.
Are you a teacher, Maria, as well?
Yes, I'm also a teacher.
Yeah. We taught in adjacent schools.
We're talking about primary school, no? Young or high schools?
Junior high school.
Middle school.
Middle school,
like,
yeah. Teenagers,
yes. And, well, it's an interesting story because one day Maria came home and said, you know, all of the teachers in my school are buying these Apple computers. And
which year was this? Can you remember?
Probably the late 1980s.
Good.
Yeah. There was a promotion, an Apple for the teacher.
Yeah.
At any rate, I asked her how much. It was $2,000. A lot of money to us then. And so, of course, I lost that battle. We bought the computer. I learned how to use it, and it changed my life. And, you know, little by little over the years, I went from teaching visual art to social studies to other, and then technology. And I was the right person in the right place.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the whole school system, now that's over 1,000 schools and 1 million students, wanted to become computerized. And I was the person who was there who knew computers and knew teaching. So I was put in charge. It was quite a challenge to be the first to promote this in the schools.
Mm-hmm. And then you came up with the idea of using podcasting that was all the rage and emerged in the mid 2000s, I mean 2005, and implement this as an educational tool.
Yeah, so where I shine in, my orientation is very much reform, progressive education. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly not a defender. If I'm writing a book, you know, 15 years ago or something on teachers doing podcasts with their students, I'm not a defender of the status quo. I want more progressive approaches. That's really my central philosophy. So, yeah, and podcasting was the thing then. Now it's become the thing again.
But yeah, in a different way.
In a different way.
I mean, it changed.
But it was undeniable, the potential.
Then. No. That was my interest, and that's why I found your book so fascinating. And when I took some elements for my thesis, the board was fascinated as well. And actually, the project was implemented by the university. I use your book and other material I checked for creating a platform that would allow students to create their own podcast, and I provided tutorials on how to convey messages through radio language and music elements and sound effects elements and everything centralized on a web page. But that was the idea. But well, where you stand now about because from the moment you wrote that book, from the moment I wrote my thesis till now, so many things changed. Back then there was no TikTok, no Instagram. Now for teenagers and students, would you say that this present moment, technology is bad or good? Is it too much technology now? What do you think?
No, the technology is not inherently good or bad. It depends on what you use it for. And, of course, the teachers are often, in the United States, I don't know education in Argentina, but I assume it's somewhat similar.
Yeah.
So often the teachers are in the position of put that phone away and take out your paper and pencil.
Yeah.
Which I think is very unfortunate.
Why?
Because this could be a long conversation, but in short, one of the most important progressive ideas that's come up in the past two decades is for young people, everyone really, but for students to stop being the consumer of content and to take on the role of the creator, and that's where the technology comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're surrounded by, you know, by cable TV and
yes.
YouTube and TikTok and all sorts of things. And if the educators don't show them how this can be an important part of their learning, then they're going to do the silly stuff.
Yeah. It's just a vessel. But
a platform to
convey. That is the positive aspect, but also you've got the downside that the quality of the content, everybody can publish. How do you single out the value for a student, for somebody as a teacher who wants their kids to their students to learn useful stuff? How do you teach them to single out useful content in this avalanche of data that anybody can publish, which is a good thing, but it's also a bad thing for the reasons I just gave you.
Well, you put your finger on it, Fernando. You teach them. You know, we set standards. What's worthwhile? What's good?
What's reliable?
What's reliable? Here's how we can figure out what are the sources? What are the motivations for posting this? That's all very teachable. In fact, these are essential skills for today's youth.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, education changes very slowly. And there's so many teachers who still want, not that there's nothing wrong with books, reading is wonderful, writing is, but they haven't, so many of them haven't embraced or fully embraced the potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is quite recent. Last week, the government of the city of Buenos Aires completely banned the use of cell phones in public schools. No, in all schools, in elementary schools, and only for specific purposes are children to be allowed to use their phones or to have their phones in their hands. I mean, they became very strict because, obviously, they argue that children get distracted. We're talking about elementary school kids, not teenagers, but they get distracted very easily. Do you guys think this is too extreme or pointless?
Well, it's happening measure? In the U.S. We have cities that have banned, I mean, the departments of education there have banned cell phones. It's very frustrating, but of course, from my point of view, they haven't really wrapped their mind around how these devices might be used positively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's either or. Either you're going to do the traditional thing or you're gone to us. You know, you're playing with your phone. There is a very fertile middle ground, and I would encourage educators to explore that. So, you know, I just want to bring up one thing that I think is very relevant here. If you read the press, which I do every day in my inbox, I get articles and position papers and advertisements from all sorts of people in the education sector. And if you look at that, you would assume we're in a crisis, and we are. The student absentee rate is very high.
Mm-hmm. So is here.
Yeah, in fact, there are parents in the U.S. All of a sudden, we have a little trend of parents who don't even register kids for school. And there's a very
because of social issues or beliefs, or because they don't believe in education, or they don't have the means to send them.
No, I think it's just
they don't fully
see the relevance.
You put your finger on it.
And we have a very, very high attrition rate of teachers. No satisfaction amongst the teachers. And are they leaving the profession? So my point in all of this is we need to, because the cure is always better policy, more data, tracking, you know, more forced compliance. We need, as educators, to engage kids in activities that are more attractive, more satisfying to them, give them a better reason to be in school and to use school to further their own personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'd like to see happen from this. And then, you know, at the end of the day, the technology, whatever it may be, old school technology, you know, slide presentations or word processing or AI-powered tools.
I was going to mention
these
that.
These are just tools.
That's another issue. What do we do with AI in kids that simply just write me a paper for tomorrow's assignment? Where do you guys stand with that?
Well, can I just address something before that?
Yeah, please.
That?
Yeah.
I think one of the major reasons why students in the United States, as well as teachers, are just don't want to be any part of the school system is because of the issue of relevance. I mean, we have a major human catastrophe unfolding, which is, you know, global warming. And then students see all this news, they consume all this news, and it unsettles them. So give them projects in school to do with how can we, in our own little way, in our community, do something, you know, to be agents of change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what education needs, to give kids a voice, the power to impact on their environment and the problems in the environment. And instead, they're being asked to be passive about things. And we're living in such a crazy, confused time that they really need the support in the schools, from the teachers and from what they're being taught and how they're being taught to be able to navigate their way through life.
No, you're saying that the social role of the school is as important as the curricula that...
Absolutely.
The question I have, in a country like Argentina, where right now, unfortunately, we've got over 50% poverty, and this has caused a rift between the middle class that in previous generations would send their kids to public school. That was my case. No, I went to a public school. Both my parents are professionals, university graduates, and I would go to the public school of the neighborhood with the son of a blue collar worker, and it was very diverse. No, but we all received very good education. Now, fast forward 30 years, and due to the economic crisis, you've got people that are super poor, so poor that their children don't eat at home, so they have to eat at the school. So public schools started to completely serve the social role. And those families that have somewhat higher means or better means, they started sending their kids to private schools, which is my case. My kids go to a private school in which the only focus is curricula, not the social role. So it seems like the school, the public school, is now an agent of, rather than equalizing society, is stressing this difference in Argentina. Are you following me?
Yes.
So that's my question, or actually my thought about this social role. I mean, if you, in certain cases, it overcomes the curricula and it becomes more of a community center that aggravates the social differences in a society such as Argentina.
Well, I think you need to draw a distinction between the social role and what I'll call the care, you know, the care role, the feeding, the medical, the custodial role.
Mm-hmm.
These really are two separate things. Mm-hmm. You know, from where Maria and I stand, it's good for kids to go to school and make friends with others who are different, from different backgrounds, who have different circumstances, for them, because that's really training for the world they're going to inherit, hopefully. And, you know, that under the guidance of enlightened teachers, that can go very well. And so listening to what you describe is evolving here sounds to me like a missed opportunity, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the greatest opportunity is to get the kids together to learn who they are and to find common ground and to work together.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. So talking about skills, that essential skills that could be and maybe aren't taught at school, such as, I mean, learning how to single out valuable information that you can find on internet. What other skills you think could be added and should be taught at school now?
Well, I think the tragedy is, in the U.S. at least, we're still heavily into the traditional orientation, which is about learning bodies of fact and simple skills routines as preparation. But really, and I'm certainly not the first person to say this, is preparation for pre-World War II jobs.
Yes.
So really, we need to weight heavier the curriculum of thinking. How do you think creatively? How do you think critically? This is given short shrift. We need to weight things heavier towards that, because ultimately, what's the skill? Kids need to learn how to learn. I have a problem. I have an issue.
What needs learn to learn.
Yeah, learn to learn. Yeah. What do I need to learn? How do I learn it?
Yeah.
How do I apply that learning?
Mm-hmm.
That's the skill set that really will make the difference.
Prioritize.
For
you. So
yes,
you even say,
exactly.
I don't need to learn this.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
We need to allow. We should allow them. Will. Yes.
Believe me, there's a lot that's taught that they don't need to learn.
Yeah. Well,
so they need to develop this independent thinker, mm-hmm. learner, creator mindset.
It's amazing. Well, you said school still prepares, seems to be preparing workers for the pre-World War II world. Some people say here in Argentina that even we apply models of the 19th century that made Argentina stand out in South America for its public education system, but that was 150
years ago.
Obviously, this needs an update. Well, final question for both of you. I think you gave me some hints about where you stand. School in the 21st century, in the years to come, should prepare workers, citizens, or just humans?
Humans.
Full humans.
I think.
What type of humans? More productive, happier.
More. Well, I think that if humans find a productive outlet and go into an environment, a school environment, where their needs are met, their intellectual needs, their psychological needs, I think they will be happier for it and bring that well-being into the job. You know, like, for example, what kind of a job do they want in the future? Well, that could be an exploration for the senior year of high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then further develop it and investigate it when they go to college, mm-hmm. so that college and high school are more aligned with how to help students.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the core of it has to be the intellectual, the emotional needs of a child growing up in the United States today or in Argentina today, and, you know, keeping it very real. Because mm-hmm. I think that's why kids don't want to go to school. What they're learning there is not useful to them.
Mm-hmm. Not relevant.
So it's not relevant. So why should I go to school? And teachers who really love kids and really want to teach well go, oh, my God, I'm being asked to teach stuff that I don't want to teach. It's not meaningful. It's not meaningful at all.
To anyone, not to teachers, not to me, not to students.
Then you have teachers who don't want to go into teaching. You have students who don't want to attend school. Yeah. I mean, it's so obvious to me, you know.
It's a completely discouraging environment.
Yeah.
Mark?
I'll make this short. We don't know. You know, it used to be that you could predict the future with some degree of certainty. That's all gone. So
should give up on that, yes.
Schools should prepare students to prepare themselves, because for the rest of their lives they're going to be morphing and changing and stepping into new shoes. We have to prepare them to prepare themselves.
Period. Nothing to add. Best way to wrap this up. Well, this has been amazing. I'm so glad you guys came over. Thank you very much. Maria and Mark, thank you for...
A great pleasure, Fernando.
Thank you for your visit. Thank you for your help with my thesis all those years ago. And enjoy the rest of your stay in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was Mark Gura and Maria, your surname?
Escalante.
Maria Escalante, educators from the United States visiting Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentine, mien xiang shi jie.
RAE, Argentine vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, sekai ni mokete, Argentin.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Okay, we continue celebrating the birthday of Jaime Ross, the Uruguayan singer-songwriter who's turning 71 today. And as I said at the beginning of today's program, we're going to be playing music only by him. There is a song which I love, dedicated to the national team of Uruguay. Football is very big in Uruguay as well. And in fact, they are one of the national teams with the biggest history. They won 2 World Cups, even though Uruguayans claim they have won 4, something contested anywhere else outside Uruguay. They say that, maybe you read the story, that because they won Olympic gold before the first World Cup that they won in 1930, and considering that those Olympic football tournaments were organized by the FIFA, they count as World Cups. Therefore, they won 4 World Cups, 2 actual World Cups plus 2 Olympic Games that count as World Cups. Well, apart from that, they are very good at football, very, very good. And they have a passion for their national team that is known for their light blue shirt, their light blue, their celeste, their celeste jersey. And they had numerous epic games, most notably the Maracanazo of 1950 when they beat Brazil in the final of the World Cup held in Brazil. And that is one of the most iconic days in the history of Uruguay, not just Uruguayan football, in the history of Uruguay, period. This song by Jaime Ross mentions that, among other things, and it's called Cuando Juega Uruguay, when the Uruguayan national team plays.
Como un cielo de verano, como el trueno de un tambor, con la cara del burguista cuando baja del camión, asomando por el túnel, dominando la emoción. A la cancha la celeste, al boliche de la esquina, cerca del televisor. Vamos, vamos arriba a la celeste. Desde el cerro a Bella Unión, vamos, como dice el negro jefe, los de afuera son de palo, que comience la función, vamos, vamos arriba a la celeste, vamos, la de ayer y la de hoy. Campeones de los pibes, los botines del 50, rock and roll y bandoneón. Cuando juega Uruguay corren 3 millones, corren las agujas, corre el corazón. Corre el mundo y gira el balón, corre el pico de la emoción, como un augurio de aquella canción. Chaitiza y Mostrador, vamos, que la historia está cantando,
el ritmo de la tenga, con la fuerza de la unión. Vamos, 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 vamos arriba la celeste. Vamos, con la pinta de un gorrión.
Vamos, con linaje de rebelde, sin más gala que su vuelo, con destino de campeón.
Pues ahí con. Asomando por el túnel, dominando la emoción, a la calle, a la celeste, a las páginas de gloria, escalón por escalón. Vamos, vamos arriba a la celeste. Vamos, desde el Cerro Avellunio. Vamos, como dice el negro jefe, los de afuera son de palo, que comience la función. Vamos, 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 vamos arriba la celeste. Vamos, la de ayer y la de hoy. Vamos, que la copa está preciosa, la tribuna la reclama. Arriba la celeste. Vamos,
vamos, vamos,
desde el Cerro a Bella Unión.
Vamos, como dice el medio jefe, los de afuera son de palo, que comience la función.
Vamos, 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 vamos arriba, vamos arriba la celeste. Vamos,
vamos, vamos,
la de ayer y la de hoy.
Los campeones de los pibes, los botines del 50, los campeones de los niños.
Okay, we do now the DX supplement of every week, which is produced by Arnaldo Slayen. Let's start with the hearings from Denmark. We report Radio 208 on 5970 kHz, broadcasting from Vidovre. It was picked up between 2023 and 2037 UTC time with songs, pop and rock songs in English. We also have World Music Radio from Denmark on 5930 kHz, broadcasting from Bramming, picked up around at around 20 UTC time with music. Language is English, and they broadcast on a parallel with a frequency of 15,700 kHz from the broadcasting site of Randers. This station, World Music Radio, can also be picked up on 25,800 kHz on the 11-meter band, transmitting from the broadcasting site of Marslet between 0748 and 0809 UTC time on a parallel also with 15,700 kHz. Moving on to Germany now, we've got a broadcaster called Shortwave Radio on the frequency of 6160 kHz, airing programs from Winsen in Germany, identifying as Shortwave Radio. Now, the Netherlands, on the frequency of 5955 kHz, we've got Sunlight Radio from Westdorp, as from 4:30 UTC time. It also identifies on the airwaves as Sunlight. We've got Radio Delta International from the Netherlands, broadcasting from Elburg on 6060 kHz between 1840 and 1953 UTC time, with all international songs and identifications in English as Radio Delta International. Norway, a country which broadcasts on the frequency on 5895 kHz through a station called Radio Northern Star, which airs programs from the town, the little town of Bergen, has been reported in English and was picked up at around 2030 UTC time. Now, there's a very curious broadcast coming from Trans World Radio India, airing programs in Vasavi language on the frequency of 13,740 kHz via the KTWR transmitting side of Agana in Guam in the middle of the Pacific. TWR India airs Mondays and Thursdays between 2 p.m. and 2:15 UTC time on the frequency of 13,740 kHz with 250 kilowatts of power for Southeast Asia. Let's mention something about the Vasavi language. It's an Indo-Aryan Western language spoken by the Vasavi people. The Vasavi live mainly on both sides of the border between Gujarat and Maharashtra states in India, the Baruch district in Gujarat and the Dhule district in Maharashtra. Always talking about India, that's the area where Vasavi is spoken, and well, they have a broadcast of the KTWR via Guam in the Pacific. And that was this week's edition of the DX supplement of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, which is produced by Arnaldo Slayen. Kind 73s. And this way we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English, for Tuesday, November 12, 2024. Our sound technician was Sergio Bosco, and the host, yours truly, Fernando Farias. Thank you very much for listening. Join us tomorrow for a new program of RAE. Ciao.